This podcast is designed to help you understand the laws of our land. I am your host, Hattie Savari, and here to help you every step of the way, whether you are a tenant, landlord, parent, child, employee, employer, neighbour or business owner, and we are all most certainly consumers. The law is in your life every single day with over 180 episodes and 5 million downloads. Get ready to listen and empower yourself with tons of jargon-free legal information in plain and simple English. Today's episode is supported by Red Bar Law, the go-to law firm for expert, efficient and fast legal assistance, all at a fixed cost. Go to our website at redbarlaw.com. Hello and welcome back to our podcast at Get Legally Speaking. We are proud to be the UK's number one legal consumer podcast. Our legal conversation today will be on credit reporting errors, USA. I am joined by Emmanuel Turnbull from the Holland law firm in Maryland, USA. Emmanuel is originally from the UK before he went over as one of the first students to enrol in the University of Maryland School of Law's graduate program over a decade ago. Emmanuel focuses his work on consumer law and he is passionate about helping consumers, and he says doing consumer rights cases properly. Thank you for joining me today, Emmanuel.
It's my pleasure. It's good to meet you and all your listeners.
Fantastic. We go into this deep dive on this topic. Errors reported on credit reports are a major issue in the US. Actually, this is also an issue in the UK. The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau reports that 189 million Americans have credit reports, and the Federal Trade Commission, also known as the FTC, reports that as many as one in five Americans have an error on at least one of their credit reports. The three most common credit reporting errors are inaccurate personal information, inaccurate reports on credit accounts, and account reporting mistakes. And I mean, and this is a shocker. The FTC says that over 33% of US citizens have experienced identity theft to the tune of some $6.1 billion in losses. In today's episode, Emmanuel and I will be discussing what actions are considered as identity theft, the devastating effect this can have on a person, and how and where to get help, all in plain and simple English. Emmanuel, welcome once again to our podcast. So let's start by explaining to our listeners, what do we actually mean by identity theft?
So simply put, identity theft is when someone who isn't you pretends to be you in order to get something.
Sounds like one of my children. Sorry, roll on.
And the something that they get sometimes will be tangible, like a cookie.
Yes.
Sometimes it will be something a bit more obscure. You get criminal records identity theft, where someone is pulled over and they pretend to be you to get out of their criminal record, avoid being arrested. You get people who steal identity in order to rent an apartment, not because they want it free necessarily, because they can't get one on their own. But usually, overwhelmingly, what you see is credit card fraud type of identity theft, where it's someone who has gained access to your genuine account, or someone opens up a brand new account in your name you know nothing about, and they spend it up to the limit, and then they run away, and the bank comes after you.
Well, this is it. And you know, it is something that goes on a lot. And I have to say, out of the very few adults in my family, 9 out of 10 of us have had our details used by fraudsters to try and get money from our accounts. I mean, apparently the most common way that scammers are getting to people's details are via the phone. And according to Experian, over $699 million was reported as losses in the last financial year. I mean, that's staggering. And, you know, we need to take this topic really seriously, because the average amount lost by each person scammed was apparently $1,200. That's a lot of money. So compared to pre-pandemic levels, say pre-2020, has the Holland law firm seen an uptick in people contacting you about credit reporting errors?
So yes, we have. Some of it identity theft, some of it other more directly pandemic-related things. But there does seem to have been a bit of an uptick that may be the result of more economic stress for people. That sometimes drives identity theft, particularly known party identity theft, which is when it's someone you know doing it.
Oh, goodness. So it's someone you know stealing your identity because they're known to you, a family or member or friend.
Right, yes. And it's tragic when it happens. Those cases are just awful. And I've seen it go practically all possible ways. Husbands and wives, parents and children even, grandparents and grandchildren.
Wow.
So it's bad when it happens, and it's more difficult to fix than stranger identity theft, because there'll often be genuine connections between the victim and the thief. And that makes it harder to convince banks that the victim didn't actually open these fraudulent accounts.
And goodness, you probably have if it's family, you probably have them saying, well, I had to use your details. You know, what was wrong with that? Some people probably don't even see there being a problem with it.
Right. So in my experience, the person who does it, there's always some rationalization for them. You know, it'll be that they're, you know, it's the parent helping their kid build their credit by opening these accounts in their name, and they always intended to pay them off, but then hard times came and they couldn't, and so on. And sometimes it's just a feeling of entitlement. This person owes me something, so I'm just going to take it by opening accounts in their name.
I'm frightened of having children. I'm frightened of my children now. Goodness.
Well, I've seen it go both ways. I've seen a parent do it to their child, and the child found out when the parent died. And I've seen a grandchild do it to grandparents on a spectacular scale. And those are really tough, tragic cases.
I have to say, out of everything that we're due to discuss today, I did not expect to hear that there are a substantial amount of sort of victims that are known to the perpetrator, and family ties are a space in which this happens. And I that's just thrown me. I honestly did not expect that at all. I mean, credit reporting errors, so errors on your credit report and identity theft, have a devastating effect on a consumer, on a person, because anything that shows as a negative, as we all know, will affect your ability to secure a car home or a car or get a home loan or rent an apartment, get a job, a credit card. So can you tell us the sort of top three things that a consumer should do to correct a mistake on their credit report once they've realised it's happened? What's the first three steps to perhaps take? And how long can it take to correct an error? Because my personal experience on that, and I know I mentioned this to you just before we pressed record, is it felt like I was pulling out teeth, and I ended up in court with the company that a company made the error, and it was rectified there. But I had to do it twice, 3 years apart.
Yes. Okay.
your so stalling there worries me, Emmanuel.
I'll start with the easy part first. What should you do? Well, what you have to do is complain. And it's very important how you do this. So in the United States, the first thing you should do is go and get your credit reports. Get them from annualcreditreport.com. Don't get them from any other website. Some of those places will have you agree to arbitration clauses. They will not actually give you quite the same information you get from Annual Credit Report. That's the official gateway to get this technically file disclosure that you're entitled to. And you should do that to make sure you have a record of what's on there and know exactly what's on there. Then you complain. You complain not to the banks, but to the credit reporting agencies, because it's the complaint to the agencies that may trigger your right to file a lawsuit.
Right.
You send your complaint to the agencies, you send it in paper, because if you do it on their website, they'll try and limit what you can say and what documents you can give them. Send it to them in paper, attach as many documents as are relevant. And you need to attach identifying documents so that they don't claim they're not sure if it's you making the complaint. If it's ID theft, you're going to be attaching a police report or a Federal Trade Commission affidavit, probably. Then you've got to sit and wait, see what they respond. Now, they have to respond within 30 days of getting your letter. How do you know if they've got it? Well, you'd better send it certified. Send it so that you get a receipt back saying it was delivered. Otherwise, miraculously, they'll lose it.
Wow. You see, that's interesting because here in the UK, the onus is not for you to prove that the sender's received it. The onus is on the receiver. Here you just say, I posted it with a stamp. And that's enough for the court. It's quite extraordinary. So there in America, you have to prove that it has been received.
Right. Effectively, yes, because the trigger is their receipt.
The date of receipt, yes.
Yeah, it's the date of receipt that triggers the time running. So if you can't prove receipt, you can't prove it. Even though America has the mailbox rule. Normally, you know, if the bank sends you a letter, you'd better believe it's going to be assumed you got it.
Yes.
If you send them something, the rules are a bit different.
Right.
So you've got to wait for them to respond. They're supposed to do an investigation. It's probably going to be fairly superficial. And if you're lucky, it will therefore take maybe 2-3 weeks to correct an error. If you're unlucky, it will take as long as you let it take. So if the credit reporting agencies won't fix the error, if they go and ask the bank that provided the information,
or the institution,
the bank says,
for example,
right, which they usually will, and the agency chooses to keep it on there, your ultimate recourse is to go and find a lawyer, like me, and file a lawsuit against them. And the basis for the suit is not that the information is wrong. The basis is that they haven't properly investigated your dispute, which is why it's important to get the dispute right and to make sure you can prove that the dispute happened.
But ultimately, you're filing your complaint because the information is incorrect.
Yes.
So you're saying the trigger for the lawsuit is the fact that the credit referencing agency hasn't carried out a sufficient investigation into proving and seeing and identifying that the information is wrong.
That's right. The agency and the bank also will have an obligation, if
yes.
the agency asks them about it, to conduct a reasonable investigation.
I mean, reporting agencies, banks, they're huge institutions, you know, and sometimes you've got people as young as 18, youngsters even younger than that, that have had this happen to them, or people who are so busy and tied up with everyday work and life, or people who are elderly and just not apt to dealing with big institutions. I mean, how many of us are, apart from when we're consumers and customers? So it can be quite a daunting kind of thought to even think you're going to challenge. But I think that with the right help, if you feel daunted by the process, you could get help very early on. I mean, somebody could call you up, Emmanuel, and say, right, this is what I've noticed on my credit report. Could you help me from this stage one? And you could provide the help, couldn't you, very early on, if somebody did find it very daunting and not able to navigate that space early on.
Yes, and that's particularly true if it's a case of identity theft, because those things, sometimes you can fix them, or you can fix most of the problems, if you get in there early and say the right things. But they can also become very problematic. I had to take an appeal for a very nice lady who defended herself in court on an identity theft case and lost. And she shouldn't have lost, but, you know, the court.
She was up against the lawyers on the other side, obviously.
Yeah, there was a lawyer on the other side, and the judge was not familiar with the relevant law that provides extra protections for victims of credit card fraud. And so I had to take this appeal to fix it. And of course, it's always easier to get it right first time than
yes.
it is to take an appeal and try to fix it.
No, absolutely, because it's difficult to start unpicking. And some things you can't unpick. You have to do more work to explain and rectify. But I tell you, the stats show that apparently Rhode Island had the highest rate of identity theft. Kansas was second, and Maryland was ninth on this list, location list, in America for identity theft. So you guys are quite up the top there, you know, not that far down the list. But I don't know what's going on Rhode Island, because they were well up there as number one. Goodness knows why.
Yeah, I do not know what is going on in Rhode Island. I'll have to ask my lawyer acquaintances up there what they're doing.
Yes, no, indeed. Well, they're probably very busy helping people. Hopefully they are. So the Federal Trade Commission reports that one in five people have an error on at least one of their credit reports. Why are errors on personal credit reports such a large problem in the US? Why is this happening to the scale that it is?
It's the problem is the institutions. Could they get it right if they cared to? Probably a lot more than they do. But the way the system works, you know, what they want is to have as many credit files as possible and spend as little as possible to maintain them, because that's what profitable, right? That's the profit motive.
And there's lots of these institutes. Are there lots and lots and lots of credit reporting companies or something? Because we don't have that many. Well, I don't think we have that many in the UK.
Well, so there are three big ones, Equifax, TransUnion and Experian. So there's some overlap too. But there are a plethora of smaller agencies covered by the same laws that do different things. So there are agencies for landlord-tenant reporting. There are agencies for reporting your prescription drug use. There are agencies for catching gamblers who cheat. There are agencies that know your check writing history. There are lots more than people realize. But mainly it is the big three. And when we're talking about these errors, we're talking about the big three. And it's happening really because of sloppy matching and sloppy procedures.
Somebody needs to step up and say, listen, Mr. Big White House, you need to put some laws in place that tidies this up, because it's happening to so many people on such a wide scale, and the effects are sometimes, you know, really, well, I don't know anyone that's got away from not having a bad effect because of their credit report. Because usually what happens, and I know this is the case in the UK, is you go and find out what your credit report is when you're about to do something in the financial world. So before that, you're just sailing along life. So maybe it's a good idea to check your credit report now and then. But, you know, you might be buying a home, or you might be going into rented accommodation, or buying a car, or applying for your credit card. And they say, no, your credit score, your credit report just didn't stack up. So it's usually when you're about to do something like that. So you're really anxious to get things sorted. And 9 times out of 10, I've seen people lose out on what they're trying to do because their credit report couldn't get fixed in time. So it is a big, big problem.
Right. That happens all the time. People will usually come to us, not because they checked their report and saw something bad, but because they applied for something and got denied, and they're trying to work out what happened. And we've seen all kinds of awful denials. You know, people who can't get the mortgage because something isn't reporting right. People denied employment because a conviction that wasn't theirs came up in a background check.
That is really frightening, you know, because, you know, they're talking about a criminal record is attached to you and you don't even know about it.
Well, you think that's frightening. There was a case, not mine as it happens, there was a case in which the agency TransUnion was incorrectly telling anyone who asked that people were on a terrorist watch list called the OFAC list. And they were doing this because, get this, they were matching people by first name, last name.
And they were allowed to do that? By who?
They're not allowed to do that, but they got away with it for long enough. You know, they felt they could, they felt it's something that they could get away with. And then they got sued and they ended up having to pay a fair bit of money. That's part of how the enforcement works here in America, is that some of the burden is put on ordinary people, but the exchange for that is that when you sue, sometimes you can get very large judgments against these agencies that that don't do things right. So you won't get this in the UK, but here...
Yes, I often say, if we were in America, I've used that with my clients in Red Bull so many times, when people say, I'm so upset by this, and this is what emotionally it's done to me. I just say, but we're not in the USA. Interesting, that point. So if, for example, and I'm just going to give you a really hypothetical example, somebody goes to buy a home, they're getting a great deal, the first buyer in there, the credit report's got something stonking on there, which is utterly incorrect, and they lose out on the purchase of that home. They're then, by the time the credit report is resolved, because the credit, let's assume the credit referencing agency really dragged their heels, they came to the Holland Law Firm. The Holland Law Firm got them to sort it out. I mean, I don't even know how long your courts are taking to list issues, obviously, if they're still catching up post-pandemic as well. But it took a year. So they had to buy another property. And then they had to pay, let's say, for argument's sake, another $20,000 for their next property because they lost out on the first. Are you saying that potentially you could sue the credit referencing agency for that $20,000 of loss that you had?
Well...
Or is that too big? Wide? Is that too wide?
That is both too good and not enough. So it's too good because, remember, what triggers the violation is when they reject your dispute. So you have to do a dispute, get rejected, and then suffer a loss, really. However, you can recover not only your actual damages, which could potentially be the increased cost of a mortgage, but you can recover emotional distress provided it has a physical manifestation, which includes things such as loss of sleep, headaches, anger. If you've been reduced to tears, that's physical manifestation.
I would make millions here. Millions and millions. I have to say, I do think the UK lacks in that sense a little bit, right? Because the amount of times I've been in court where the judge will say, I have absolute compassion for you and I totally understand why you're feeling this way, you know, Mr. and Mrs. Client. However, and then nothing is awarded for emotional distress. And I've seen lives get ruined because of employment cases, both employers, employees, or, you know, things that have been lost as a result of disputes. But nothing gets awarded for emotional distress. And I do think that the US is in the right space and in the right place for that, if I may say so.
Right. I agree. I you wouldn't be able to bring many of the cases that we would bring here over there because of the emotional distress.
Is that why you're here, there, Emmanuel, and not in the UK?
Oh, gosh, I'm sorry.
No, I won't. We've had this conversation. But it is, I do think that the UK lacks in its legal system for really and properly compensating everyday people for emotional distress as a result of litigation or some kind of loss, particularly in these circumstances where it's not your fault that this has happened. It's called identity theft or an error, credit reporting error. And there are, you know, hundreds and thousands of large institutions which should be getting this stuff right.
Right. But the only way I think that you will get fair compensation, though, is if the amount of the award is decided by ordinary people in a jury.
A jury, I was just going to say, yes.
Right, because a judge anywhere, here as well, is going to be disproportionately well off. They've probably not had these kinds of problems themselves, and they won't necessarily feel the same as ordinary people would.
You know,
judges are probably going to get some degree of special treatment from people who know their judges, including institutions. And an ordinary person on a jury will have a better sense of what it feels like to have this black mark against you that isn't even yours.
Yes, yes. No, I totally get it. I mean, I know we've spoken about the importance of consumer credit being reports being correct, but why is it? Let's just spell it out. Why is it so important for a person's credit report to be correct and to not have any errors?
Because all these decisions get made based on your credit reports. Whether you can get credit by a car, sometimes whether you can get a job, whether you can get a roof over your head even. Some landlords won't rent you if you've got bad credit. And it can go further than that too. Because if there's negative information on your report, if there's false information, it can make it easier for people to commit further identity theft against you.
Yes.
Because the banks are going to be checking your credit reports to see if the person applying is you. And if someone's able to get a bad address on your credit report, it makes it a whole lot easier for them to impersonate you and cause you even more problems.
Yes, especially if they think, oh, we've just got a credit card in that person's name. 3 months have passed or 6 months have passed and they haven't picked up on it. So let's do another one. Let's commit another fraud and use that person's right. details again. No, I get it. It affects your whole life. I mean, your whole adult life. And I think even if you're not going to get credit, it's really concerning to know that you could have a criminal record that's not yours. You know, and you should, I think, once a year as an absolute minimum and standard, you should just check your credit report to make sure everything's tickety-boo. And if it's not, take the steps that Emmanuel's pointing out as initial steps. And then obviously, Emmanuel, where can our listeners get hold of you if they would like to get some help?
So if you need help with these or other consumer law issues, the best place to go to reach me is hollandlawfirm.com. That's our website. We've got a contact form right there, and it will put you into our system and ask you for the kinds of documents I'd really need to see to be able to help you. And if you do that, you will get our attention.
Fantastic. Well, there you have it, Emmanuel. That's all we've got time for.
Thanks very much. Thanks very much for having me on, and to all your listeners out there, I hope you stay safe, and I hope you don't experience any of the things we've just talked about.
Yes, I second that. Thank you, Emmanuel. Thank you so much for being a great guest. And what I'll say to our listeners is don't forget to click and subscribe to our podcasts. We have over 160 to choose from. You can find us on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, and YouTube by searching Get Legally Speaking. Also visit our website at getlegallyspeaking.com. Thank you for listening.